All right, good morning, everyone. It's Thursday, July 6, 2017. The time is now 11:04. We will start the public meeting of DEGA, the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Lisa Collier. I have here with me all of our board members, Carol Schwartz, Norma Hutchinson, and Shamari Wade. That form, adoption of the agenda. If there are no changes, can I entertain?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Let's move on with the report from the director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Open meetings act trainings. The Office of Open Government was invited by the DC Auditor to a brown bag lunch on June 21st to speak to staff about ways the DC Auditor's Office could improve government transparency and to inform the staff about the district's open records laws. It was an informative and engaging hour-and-a-half-long discussion, and for many on the staff, it was the first time they were hearing about the Office of Open Government. It was also an opportunity for staff to ask detailed questions about FOIA, specifically in relation to the records they review and request at the DC Auditor's Office. The regularly scheduled monthly MOTA training for the end of June was canceled due to low attendance. However, in an effort to make the trainings more accessible and convenient, MOTA has arranged with the Office of Cable Television to record the upcoming trainings on the July 26th and August 2nd trainings with the intention of turning the trainings into an online offering for new public body members. I'm working with MOTA currently to ensure that only the OOG slides are shown as part of the official training for the Open Meetings Act. This will only be an interim fix, however, until the Office of Open Government creates its own online training course where we can track internally the attendees of the trainings. To date, we have not been very successful, despite several requests of MOTA, in getting the attendee list so that the office can more directly monitor compliance with training requirements. The Yates matter, we're hoping the judge will issue an opinion on the next continuance date, which is July 14th. So there's still no movement as of yet to report. Since the last board meeting, the Office of Open Government has handled 17 FOIA advice requests and 15 Open Meetings Act advice requests. 11 of those requests were technical in nature. We have issued two Open Meetings Act opinions since the last meeting. One was upon the request from the Department of Transportation concerning the appropriate way for the Major Crash Task Force to review records in closed session. And the second resolved an Open Meetings Act complaint against the Board of Zoning. Both opinions entitled Major Crash Task Force and N. McKinta, respectively, may be found on the Office of Open Government website. We're currently drafting a FOIA opinion that we received asking the, a request for a FOIA opinion that we received asking the OOG to weigh in on whether the Office of the Inspector General improperly redacted records that had been previously publicly reported on and publicized in the news. Since the last board meeting, we have received three Open Meetings Act complaints that are currently open. As a result of the Freedom of Information Act opinion issued in April regarding the Okto email search process and its implications for FOIA, Mr. Barton and I met with the mayor's open government officer to discuss options to remedy the delay for email searches and to discuss other areas of improvement to the FOIA process. I've been asked, I'm happy to say, to return for a third year to conduct a three-hour session on government transparency and strategic communications for fellows participating in the White House Young African Leadership Initiative. That session will be conducted next Thursday at the Howard University School of Business. And finally, upon referral by the Executive Office of the Mayor on July 18th, I will meet with a staff delegation from the Argentine National Congress to discuss the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA best practices, and the role of the Office of Open Government. And that concludes my update.
One question on the video training. Obviously, MOTA is focused on commissioners, but the training that
So the intention is to have two trainings as we currently do. We have the new boards and commissions member training for the Open Meetings Act, and then we have the more detailed training, which includes training on access to the central calendar that we provide to the points of contact. We don't provide that point of contact training on our website right now. We don't make those slides available online for security reasons because it goes into accessing our website. But the intention is, yes, to provide an interactive online training where we're posing questions throughout to ensure that people aren't just logging in, letting it roll, and then clicking that they actually took the training.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
May I ask a question, Madam Chair? Can you expand a little more on the OCTO delays? What's really impacted our...
Yes. So... currently, OCTO is woefully understaffed. As it's my understanding, they have 2 to 3 people who are fielding the email search inquiries from all district government agencies, both subordinate and independent. For those agencies who host their websites on and emails on OCTO servers. So anytime a FOIA request comes in where a requester is requesting any number of emails for any date range, even if it's a broad date range, those requests have to specifically go through OCTO. Now, what ends up happening is that although agencies are doing their best to timely submit those email search requests to OCTO, OCTO is unable to meet all those requests as they come into the queue because there's such a voluminous amount of those requests. So the net result is that agencies end up being out of compliance with the timeliness requirements of the Freedom of Information Act. You cannot invoke a additional 10-day extension under FOIA for email searches. That's not one of the parameters by law. You can't do that. So what we are hoping to come up with now is a way for OCTO, and this is via the EOM directly, I'm not directly involved with this at all, is for the mayor's office to A, try to give additional support to OCTO in the interim, and B, come up with a cloud-based system now that everyone has switched to Office 365 to more quickly search those email queues without having to rely on specific search terms. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think we've received any emails since May. Well,
you haven't received any emails from OCTO since May?
No, we have not.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to work with you if you want some assistance there. So.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know what OCTO's internal procedures are. Like once they receive the request, once Mr. Brown receives the request at OCTO, if they bifurcate, if they field the FOIA request first and then all other second, I don't know.
Yeah. In the past, we've asked them to expedite our request and they've done so.
Okay.
Maybe we'll try that.
My guess is that. You'll likely have to renew the request because I think OCTO has been focused on the 365 migration.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Mr. Flowers.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Brian Flowers. I'm the General Counsel. With me on the phone is the Director, Darren Sobin. Before I begin, I think Director Sobin may want to make some remarks.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Background noise. I'm sort of in a compromised environment here. But good morning, board members, and everybody in the boardroom right now, especially the staff. Board members, I've spoken to each of you personally, but I just want to say publicly now, my plans are to step down effective July 22nd as agency director. To take another position with the D.C. Bar. That information is now public. I've spoken to the mayor's folks about it and contacted the council about it. I think it's appropriate at this point, or at least convenient, for Mr. Flowers to give my notes today, especially since my phone is a little bit, the battery's a little low on it. But anyway, I'll be on the line. I just want to say it really has been a pleasure working with everybody for the last 5 years or so, and I'm hoping our paths will cross again in the future.
Thank you. Darren, we will be in contact and we will celebrate with you on your new engagement, but I want to take the time to publicly thank you for your service to the board. It is a huge loss to us. But again, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say I've had a year and a half as a board member here to work with you, Darren, and I think you've been an excellent person to lead our group. As Tamika said, we're going to miss you greatly. I think you are a tremendous loss to the D.C. government. I'm glad you're going to stay in town and do something still kind of related to us with the D.C. Bar. But I just wish you all the best, and I want to know it's been a privilege to work with you in the year and a half that I was able to do so.
Thank you, Board Member Schwartz.
And this is Board Member Norma Hutchison, and I also would echo everything that's been said. I've only been on the board a little over a year, about a year, and have thoroughly enjoyed working with you, and good luck in your new endeavor.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
And Darren, this is Shamari. To echo everyone's sentiments, we will be missed. I've known you for a while, even when I was a young attorney starting out in D.C. government, and you've been a great mentor, and we thank you for your service.
Thank you. I much appreciate it.
Ms. Flower.
Okay, thank you. The first item on our agenda is to go over the monthly statistics. And you'll see that basically we opened only one case last year compared to 8 and 11 the previous month. So it's sort of good to see a slowdown since we had so many the previous 2 months. We closed 3 cases.
I want to just correct you. You said, okay, one case last year. I know.
I'm sorry, last month. Thank you.
I just wanted to correct the record.
Right. Yeah, we closed a few more than one last year.
Needs us if that's all we're going to do.
Yeah. So currently we have 16 cases open, and that's been pretty consistent. We're working on that to eliminate some, and I think within the next couple of days we'll be down a few more, see how many come through the door. And then we have the cases that are inactive or that were stayed, and that's fairly consistent with 23. On the next page, you see I've noted how old some of those cases are, and I think that reflects both the nature of the cases and how quickly we're able to resolve cases. We have our 120-day standard, and we try to stick to that. But you see here these stayed cases that are being considered by other agencies more than a year old. So we proceed in a different manner. And maybe comparing apples to oranges, because some of the cases are fairly complex, which is why we sort of referred them in the first place. They involve contracts, contractors, and not simply employees, and though others do involve employees, and they're just in court and administrative proceedings.
Is there a statute of limitations concern with some of these cases?
No, I don't think so. No, because we certainly receive them timely, you know, January 16, so we've had plenty of time. I'm not aware of any statute of limitation other than the one going back before 2012. So after the statistics, we have our publication and reporting obligation. June 30 marked the end of the third quarter in fiscal year 2017, so we updated the quarterly complaint report for publication as required. That was placed in the Dropbox. It'll be placed on the website either tomorrow or early next week. We will also be completing our performance measures for the third quarter prior to the next meeting. We're gathering those now, and a lot of that's based on what is on the quarterly complaint report. Trainings and outreach attended by staff. Today there were 3 members who were scheduled to be trained on the application that's used to maintain our website. I think that's Drupal, I think's the name of the application. Since the migration of the site back to Okta, we have to receive this training to make changes to our own website. Otherwise, we have to forward the information to Okta to make the change, and we just thought it better to be able to do it in-house. Of course, a lot of this was previously done by Mr. Katab, so you see we need 3 people, 3 non-tech people to replace 1 technically trained person.
I've made the offer that if Okta is willing to give WADA access to the website, we can assist internally
getting updates. I also had access at one point to the hospitality myself. We were making updates as needed, so I'll extend the offer if I pursue that one.
Oh, it'd be tremendously helpful.
I was going to ask if WADA was one of the ones that scheduled the 10 training.
No problem. I'm not sure WADA needs the training.
You should probably be doing it, right?
Well, truthfully, we had three scheduled to attend, but only one was able to make it. One is here at the board meeting today, and the other had an emergency. So thank you for your offer. So approximately 2 weeks ago, all Vega staff in the Office of Government Ethics received active shooter and CPR training from HCMA, and it was conducted in this room. Hopefully we won't need to use either of those, but at least we received it. Conducted by staff 9, which is less than the 12 conducted last month. The 9 trainings include 2 new employee orientations and MSS trainings, which include primarily cover FDS, informing people of their FDS requirements. 1 general board and commission training at the Commission on Aging, a training session at the Child and Family Services Agency, and an ethics training program conducted for LEAP, which stands for Learn, Earn, Advance, and Prosper. Those were program participants at DOES. That's done every summer. I guess it's similar to the Summer Youth Employment Program. That's the way I think of it. But that was conducted by Mr. Cook, their investigator. So we also met with the dean of the D.C. School of Law to provide training on the local Hatch Act. She specifically requested it, and we're happy to accommodate her. Ethics Day. Last year, Vega held its annual Ethics Day and Best Practices Symposium on October 20th at the UDC David A. Clark School of Law. While the Ethics Day, which was a day filled with a variety of ethics courses, I think 8 courses, obtained a favorable amount of attendance, the symposium did not. This year, OGE is proposing that the board only host an Ethics Day that would be equivalent to last year's program, but not include a symposium. I believe the statute only requires us to produce the best practices report, and the symposium was used to inform that report.
That's correct.
So there was no requirement that we have a symposium. It's just a question of the means we use to produce the report. So with the board's approval, Ethics Day could include a presentation by former council member Michael Brown, who agreed in his negotiated disposition to conduct 12 in-person ethics presentations to district employees within 18 months of his release from federal custody. Mr. Brown was released last month. We have reached out to his attorney to determine his availability. His attorney seems receptive to the approach that's been proposed.
That would be an interesting ethics presentation. Let me go back to the symposium. Do we have any feedback as to why it was not well attended? Was it the timing?
There are some different thoughts. I think it was the timing. There was a break between the Ethics Day classes and the symposium. I don't know if it was an hour or two, but people basically were hungry. They went home and they didn't return. That was sort of my impression. Had it been continuous, maybe, or earlier in the day, I don't know. But it's a thought, and we're going to have to come up with some sort of proposal. And, of course, it's up to the board in terms of what you decide to do. We've also thought about some other locations, like downstairs or somewhere else, just some place that would sort of drive attendance.
I was there, and I do think I was present during much of the afternoon of the ethics training. And then, of course, it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and we were all just kind of sitting around, those of us who stayed. And so I think either you've got to do it early, at like 6 or 5, 6 o'clock, maybe have it be, you know, little food related, or it could even be a bag lunch if we're not going to, you know, want to provide a meal. I think you know how they have bag lunches, they
right.
could have a bag dinner. And then do it then, I think, might make, because I think it was ridiculous. We had this big auditorium, and there were the participants and a few other sitting there, and it was, you know, therefore, it was kind of like, I hate to say a waste of time, because I think those who were there got a lot, but it was, you know, a pretty prestigious group that was presenting, and it was so sad not to have a decent audience for them. So I, you know, I'd be certainly glad to participate in any kind
of. Well, we know that food does attract people.
It does.
I think that's why they left. The lack of food.
I'm a member of this board, so I stayed, but I'm telling you, if it, you know, I'm not sure otherwise. So I think that if you want me to be involved in any kind of discussion about that, I might have some ideas. And but I agree with you under the same kind of scenario. Why bother?
And I was in attendance as well last year, and to echo Carol, we had a phenomenal panel. So, I mean, just the discussion and the topics were really timely and just some real thought leaders in the world of ethics. So to the extent that I could be of any service or help to brainstorm ideas to increase attendance, let me know. But I think BIG, it has a lot of weight, and so I think if we do request people, they'll come. You know, we had the Attorney General and the Council Chair. Maybe location, maybe something. I appreciate what UDC did, but maybe something closer downtown. Maybe something just in terms of to accommodate people's work schedules. But
and if the board was inclined to have a symposium, we would need some sort of a theme.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Speaking from point of self-interest in all of this, the symposium sort of been scripted by someone I know well the last couple of years. I would not be offended if the board didn't have a symposium this year. But aside from that, two things. We've got a few immediate issues that will be sort of resolved today that we need to deal with that I think should be the subject of some focus. And looking ahead to the best practices report, which is required by statute and only that, just remind maybe some of the new members that 2 years ago, I think it was a very abbreviated, almost letter-like report on what we thought was going to be the CCC, which sadly didn't happen. So looking ahead to this December, I can anticipate sort of doing a similar thing, saying this is the embodiment of best practices, one of the few codes of conduct in the country that not only binds the executive branch but the legislature, and indeed, you know, take that as a starting point. If not, that'll be the sum and substance of the report, or lay into the council for its failure What now? Two and a half years? When did we? Maybe
about 2 years.
About 2 years. hadn't done anything. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Let's have some further discussion on a symposium and what it would look like. I think there are some opportunities here, but I am cognizant of the fact that we've got some requirements to take care of and we are down manpower, or will be. Regarding former Councilmember Brown, it is shocking enough to draw attention. My only concern is obviously making sure that the focus is not him, but ethics. And I have the utmost confidence that you or whoever's in charge will make that happen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I want to concur with that, because when I read this, this would be under the auspices of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. I was a little taken aback, and he may have a need to do that under his settlement.
Yeah, he's required to do it.
Well, he's required to do it, but we're not required to do it. I want you to think about that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand how he would do it outside of our purview, because he would be presenting essentially on ethics, and I thought that we would be the ones coordinating the programs.
Well, I think we maybe, Madam Chair, need to have further investigation into that, because I mean, I can see this being a cartoon in the Washington Post. And I don't want to be a cartoon in the Washington Post. I don't want Bega to be a cartoon. So I think we really need to look into what that settlement is and if it required us to have former council member Michael Brown, who just got out of prison, for doing ethics training 18 months, within 18 months of his release from federal, it was
12 in-person presentations.
12 in-person presentations. I want further research done on how that's supposed to happen before.
Yeah, I was not involved in that negotiated disposition. But.
All right. Well, I think we need to find out about it before we have the auspices of this office conducting, you know, presenting, allowing, whatever you want to say, 12 in-person ethics presentations by
Mr. Flowers, that was a big negotiated disposition.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's
approved by the board.
Yes. So it was the previous board that approved that negotiated disposition. I think Board Member Schwartz is very
obviously I wasn't here.
We're saying the same thing. Just be careful in terms of presenting it as former member councilman is giving the ethics presentation. He is the example of what not to do, and I'm sure he has some interesting insight. But it is Bega, it is OGE that is giving the ethics training, using him as an example.
Yeah, I completely understand. This board will have the final say in terms of what happens and how it's presented. So moving along, advisory opinions, advice. Informal advice, approximately 78 since the last meeting, slightly up from 66 last month. And this includes some of the inquiries related to lobbyist registration matters, and it's likely driven by the looming deadline on Monday. So that's one explanation for why the numbers are up, because we have included those some of those inquiries. The comment period on the proposed sua sponte advisory opinion on the ethical standards that apply to ANC commissioners closed on June 21st, 2017. We received more than a dozen comments on the rulemaking, most from ANC commissioners in opposition to applying the DPM to themselves.
Surprise.
Those comments are in the Dropbox. I think there were one or two that were supportive of, you know, specific and discrete issues. And they did focus on the examples, some of them. So. Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. You may recall that last winter, Councilmember Che contacted Bega with questions about lobbying filing requirements in connection with her investigation into GGS's contracting and personnel management. As a result of that investigation and in consultation with Bega, she introduced the Lobbying Disclosure Amendment Act of 2017 to update the district's lobbying disclosure laws to cover contracts, reprogrammings, and procurements. The bill was introduced by 9 other council members, including Councilmember Allen, to whose committee the bill has been referred. That bill is in your Dropbox. I think Senior Attorney Grimaldi might have some comments.
Just a related point, with the introduction of this bill, it makes at least the second that would seek to amend the Ethics Act. The other one was Councilmember Nadeau's reintroduced bill that also lapsed at the end of last period with the CCC. So again, circling back to the CCC, which I think should be a primary focus, we need to keep the committee, Councilmember Allen's committee, focused on the body of these bills, really, and make sure that when the CCC finally becomes law, it's not done in a piecemeal fashion, but certainly is, as it says, a comprehensive code of conduct.
If the council seeks to address the ethical standards that apply to ANCs, that would be the vehicle as well.
Right.
would just, again, with this opinion out there, there's no clock ticking in terms of, you know, needing to finalize this opinion. And indeed, given some of the comments, which I'm sure you read, if the CCC should become law, it will resolve any doubt in any ANC's mind that this is what applies to them. So,
under rulemaking, the final rulemaking that was approved at the March meeting clarifying our authority to impose late fees on a confidential filer who fails to timely file a true, accurate, and complete, and fully complete financial disclosure statement became effective upon publication in the Register on June 23rd. And this is sort of important because it's very clear that we have the authority to find public disclosure, financial disclosure statement filers, but there was some ambiguity with respect to the confidential filer since they file with agencies and they didn't file with us. And so we're trying to reach down and get them. As to the budget, that was adopted final last month by the council. I don't know if Director Sobin has any comments on that. I don't know.
He might, I text him to put his phone on mute, so he might.
Okay, so we'll move along. Staffing, pleased to report that our new auditor began working on June the 12th.
Hello. Sorry about that, guys. I couldn't get you off the mute button. Did you have a question?
Did you have any comments on the budget, Darren?
No, the budget's okay right now. We're moving along with the Octo e-filing system, the MOU, I'm approving that as soon as I can access the system. We've had some server issues with me getting on that system, but we're okay. I think we're going to be okay till the end of the fiscal year, too.
Okay, great.
Okay.
So our new auditor is Mr. Ishmael Akai, right there.
Welcome.
Very well qualified individual from a top 10 accounting firm, and he's filling the vacant auditor position. On that note, our former auditor, Clara Oluwami, has returned twice to help acclimate Mr. Akai on some of the processes and procedures that she used during her tenure. And this is very helpful because none of us are auditors. So that will, I think that hopefully that was helpful to him. So we'll also be bringing on board another employee who formerly worked with us on assignment from a temporary staffing agency, and he will be helping with administrative matters pertaining to FDS.
So,
can I just add one thing to that?
Sure.
So the mayor's cabinet meeting the other day, DCHR is making it okay to post any new positions that agencies might receive in the new fiscal year immediately. To advertise, post, to interview, and to actually give an offer letter prior to the October 1 new fiscal year starting. So the person that would be hired would be able to start exactly on October 1 in the new fiscal year. Now that would apply to the second position. First position that we're hiring for, we could bring that person on board immediately as a temporary FTE, and use, you know, some of our funds from lobbyists and FDS and the fines to pay that individual up until the beginning of the fiscal year. The only problem with the second position and bringing that person on board, again, is physical space. Now, I've met with, spoken to folks at Department of General Services about our space needs. And they are in the process now of trying to locate space for us. We're coming up with different options. The goal, of course, is to provide space to us that will allow us to fill these two positions and then to expand somewhat in the future. So I'll keep you guys updated on that. And then, of course, you know, my successor will be in on that as well. Any questions?
So the second FTE will be an administrative position?
Yes. Well, good question, actually. That's our thinking right now. But my recommendation to my
my successor will be, they may want to consider, instead of an administrative position, filling it with a paralegal, because that would reduce some of the burden on our attorneys doing FTS and lobbyist matters.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to lobbyist financial disclosure matters. We're still working to get all non-compliant public financial disclosure statement filers to file their forms via our e-filing system. Approximately 90% of designated filers for this year have filed their forms. On June 16, we published a list of filers and non-filers in the DC Register. We have also published that information on our website, which we believe will encourage additional employees to file. We'll continue to update that list as employees file their forms, and we have been able to maintain a 24-hour response time for all FDS inquiries. Confidential filer, confidential financial disclosure statement enforcement. Using the ethics officer's confidential filer reports, we're keeping track of confidential filer compliance and responding to any issues that ethics counselors find while reviewing confidential financial disclosure statements. These are the current filers for last year, but we're really focused on this next group, which is the ones who are really a year delinquent. So last month, we informed you that we would be sending out fine letters to confidential financial disclosure statement filers who failed to file last year. On June 21, we sent out 21 letters to filers who failed to file after our attempts to notify them of their noncompliance with the 2016 filing requirements. So far, we've not received any fine payments, but three employees have filed their forms. We'll give the filers a few more weeks to voluntarily pay the fine, and then we'll begin coordinating wage garnishments. So what went out was actually a fine letter. It was a letter imposing a fine upon these 21 non-filers. And at some point, there's going to have to be enforcement action, so there'll be NOVs presented to this board. We're basically waiting until there was a manageable number, and I think we're probably there now. I think we can handle a dozen or more NOVs of this nature because they're basically boilerplate.
And all 21 are current district employees?
Yeah, I think we have to do it because, I mean, now it's obviously they didn't file their 2017 if they haven't filed their 2016. Is that correct on all 21 of them?
I don't know if we've looked at that. Have you looked to see if
they filed this year? No, but I can check on that.
Okay. Because I think, I think you have to be serious. Not just communicating, but actually imposing the fine.
Okay.
I have a question. So I have a question. I'm sorry. Good morning, board members. This is Asia Stewart Mitchell, attorney advisor for Vega. I guess the question would be, I'm wondering how we would proceed as far as the fine. Should we hold off on the fine and the wage garnishment if we're going to bring enforcement action? Do we want the fine to be a part of the enforcement action? Do we fine them and then also bring an enforcement action? Because the letter has gone out saying, you have to pay this $300, and I'm just wondering how that would fit in with also bringing the enforcement action.
That's a great question. The enforcement action would, my recommendation and board members, I want your input, is to focus on the fine and the wage garnishment and then bring an enforcement action. Because the enforcement action, you'll get a public reprimand and then a fine, but are we going to double fine them?
Right.
Or
should we only bring enforcement actions against those who don't pay the fine? Because in the letter, they are instructed to immediately file their form from 2016, reflecting information from 2015, and also pay their fine. So I guess if they comply with one and not the other,
so if they file based on the letter, their 2016 statement, then I would recommend we do not bring an enforcement action that's purely a fine issue. And again, please chime in. If they completely ignore the letter so that they have not filed their 2016 statement and also have not paid the fine, then I think that's appropriate for an enforcement action.
But I'd like to add, can I?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think, though, if they only pay the fine, I mean, file the form now, given that you've said you're going to get a fine and we need the form, I still think that they should have a fee of $300 for a late. There should be some remuneration from them for filing a year late their form. I mean, we're glad we're going to get their form, and maybe we won't do the wage garnishment, but I still think there should be some financial penalty for having waited a year. And also, you said they were going to have to pay a fine. We need their form filed, and you're going to have to pay a fine. And now, if we're not going to charge them the fine, at least there should be the $300 fee for a late payment, a late filing of the form.
No, for clarification, all of them are now subject to a fine, regardless
right.
of how we proceed. All
okay,
21
well, I just
of these individuals are subject to a fine.
Right.
I think what we're discussing now is how to move forward. There are two issues. One is collection of the fine, and two is enforcement proceedings to make sure they actually file the statement.
Right.
And to prevent more work for the same results, for the staff, I'm proposing that for those individuals who, in response to the demand notice, submit the form but do not pay the fine, then you move forward with the garnishment. For those that completely ignore the form, the demand notice, then we move forward with enforcement action. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, but the first one still has to pay the fine of that.
All of them will be subject to some monetary penalty.
Okay, that's what I just wanted a clarification of that.
Okay,
so that I think that's fine.
That sounds good.
I concur.
And if by some chance we have a person who pays the fine but just refuses to file the form, that would be an enforcement action as well.
Correct.
Okay, great. That's all I wanted, some clarity. Thank you, Board.
Yeah, the only way they get out of that $300 fine at this point is to apply for a waiver.
So I wanted to bring the issue of waiver. Several meetings ago, we discussed the form of the waiver, and I wanted to make sure that was still on the radar, making it a little more of a formal process.
You mean sort of an actual form for the employee to file?
So we discussed a certification specifically. So when requesting a waiver, it's not an informal email. The employee will actually have to certify to the statements made in the waiver request.
Yeah, we can develop that.
And we did discuss that at a last meeting or the meeting
before. It's been 2-3 months.
I'll go back and find it. So lobbying activity reports for the first 6 months of 2017 are due next Monday or this Monday, July 10. Lobbyists have been filing their reports for the last few weeks, and we expect many more reports to be filed up until the filing deadline. As of this Monday, 70 activity and 14 termination reports have been filed. So that you may be receiving waivers from those fines in due time as well. Moving on to non-confidential investigations. There's only one that's non-confidential that we are sort of updating you on today. The attorney who handles that is in the Drupal training right now. So I'll do the best I can. So number 1031-007, in re Kaya Henderson. It's a formal complaint based on a report of investigation received from the Inspector General containing a finding that former Chancellor Henderson violated DPM 1800.3H that requires employees to act impartially and not give preferential treatment to any private organization or individual. According to DCPS, there was no formal record-keeping process for the discretionary transfer requests received by the Chancellor. Those requests would have most likely been received, then approved or denied via telephone or email. DCPS is in the process of obtaining any such emails and has agreed to release all of the documentation that was provided to the IG during this investigation. We're also in the process of gathering and reviewing the Chancellor's emails and conducting interviews of DCPS employees who served under the Chancellor. Now, we do have some emails from a previous investigation that we have access to, and we have emails that the Inspector General provided to us. However, we are waiting on OCTO for additional emails, and I suspect that DCPS is doing the same. We have found some additional information in those emails. I can say that.
So Matt has something. So this is the same matter that the Office of Open Government voted by.
I see.
We don't foresee right now any overlap, but of course, if something comes up and our research investigation come up with whatever they think is going to be, we'll be certain to inform the ethics side of the house.
Thank you.
So that's sort of where we are now. We're waiting for the additional emails and to interview the Chancellor. There have been some other interviews conducted. We interviewed some people that were not interviewed by the IG.
And what can you tell me about timing of all of this?
Well, I don't think we can really, I can tell you anything until we receive the additional emails, you know, given what you wanted us to look for. We can sort of double down and try to, you know, disgorge those emails from OCTO, but right now that's sort of what we're waiting for. But in the emails that we do have, you know, we did find a few things that were not in the report.
Okay.
That's all we have.
Do you have any questions on the Henderson investigation? All right, moving on, we will open it up to any public comments.
Hello, Mr. Syndrome. Do you have any comments you want?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Still morning. Good morning, Commissioners, all those with the sound of my voice. Tracy Hughes, you do an outstanding job. Thank you for sharing with me the agenda. Most helpful. Keep up the good work. Mr. Sullivan, I wish you well with the D.C. Bar. However, cautionary note, bad company corrupts good character. I want to echo what you proposed, Madam Chair, with regard to the disclosure forms, failure to do it timely or at all. To have a law in the books is good, but if it's not enforced, it's meaningless. So there has to be some consequence. And I think what you hit the nail on the head, Madam Chair, to push forward again with the enforcement you proposed and the waiver, not just to make it, you know, pro forma that if you do the waiver, it's a done deal, that it must be subscribed to under penalty of law with consequences if there's anything inopposite to truth. With regard to Michael Brown and his presentation, keep in mind it's court imposed and there are consequences to actions. I want to echo your sentiment, Councilwoman Schwartz. I know you hold the council near and dear to your heart as a former member, but I think it's important, as pointed out, to show what is not to be done. I think what you have indicated with the post, the dog and pony show, that needs to be shut down. That was done with Betty Noel, with the with People's Council, and then when Mayor Gray submitted her nomination for the Public Service Commission, the post, you know, went wild. And it was basically because PEPCO pulled out all the stops and put a lot of money into council members' coffers. I think the only one that claimed was not receiving anything was Wells at the time. But we want to avoid that, like you point out. But again, I think it would be insightful to have former Councilman Brown come forward and, again, point out what should not be done. That would be a good thing. But, again, to let the Post be put on notice and any other kind of press that, you know, they're not – VIGA will not tolerate dog and pony, and certainly to authorize – a rebuttal in the Post should that happen. Last but not least, I have a question for you all. Today at the Council, a little later on, there's going to be a Grant Administration Amendment Act of 2017. It's Bill 220165. This is before the Committee on Government Operations, Brandon Todd, Chairman. It says here, to make it unlawful for a grantor to require a person applying for a grant to disclose whether the applicant or the applicant's agents have been charged, indicted, or convicted of an offense, or is a subject of legal proceedings related to the applicant's organization. I'm at a loss here. How, first of all, Brandon Todd is bringing this forward, and moreover, I would think you'd want to have transparency. Open government certainly requires what I call the acronym, the art of good governance, accountability, rule of law, and transparency, but this bill seems to defy all of that. And maybe you guys can enlighten me on why this is being put forward. Any thoughts?
Mr. Sindrum, we have no information on that bill.
Again, it's a Grant Administration Amendment Act of 2017, Bill 220165.
I heard you. We have no information on that bill.
Okay, and I'm looking at, again, the Secretary's copy, which indicates to make it unlawful for a grantor to require a person applying for a grant to disclose whether the applicant or the applicant's agents have been charged, indicted, or convicted of an offense, or is a subject of legal proceedings related to the applicant's organization. It's been said repeatedly by the Chair, Mendelson, and others, the integrity of the Council is tarnished. No, it's obliterated. And this bill seems to further insulate wrongdoing. A little later on, I may weigh in and testify, and I will, keep the board, you all, apprised of developments.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're welcome.
Do we have anybody else for public comment? All right. No more public comments. We will move into executive session, which is non-public. To deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B13 and personnel matters pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B10. I'll entertain a motion to move into executive session.
So moved.
Madam Chair, if I may, there's one other point I wanted to make as well.
Mr. Soldrum, you can do it at the next board meeting.
Okay, very well.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So it's additionally 2-575B14 as well to discuss a matter in closed session pertaining to the Office of Open Government.
Entertain a motion as amended by Ms. Hughes to move into executive session.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. The time is now 11:57. Let's move into executive session. All those without matters before the board, please excuse yourselves.
Ishmael, you could stay.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
What's that?
I am, yes. Yeah. Thank you.